Good evening and welcome to episode 10 of Two Old Dolphins. This week is a special week because Alex is traveling and he's out of the company and out of the country. And I have a special guest with me. I'd like to introduce him to everyone. He is Alex's son. He is going to be in violation of the Two Old Dolphins tenet, right? Grumpy old men. He's a millennial, but he's got quite a bit of knowledge and experience around the Dolphins and some of the other Miami pro teams. And he's also a graduate of the University of Miami. He is a Hurricane, so there is that, right? So say hello, Alejandro.
What's up, Dolphins? This is Alejandro. Glad to be on the podcast with you, Scott. This is awesome.
All right. Well, glad to have you here, man. So maybe we'll have some less agreement. Grumpy old man versus millennial taking place this evening.
I'm trying to bring some positivity to the podcast.
Yeah, well, I did mention during our last podcast that some of the little bit of feedback that we've gotten so far has been you guys need to be more positive. And boy, that was a struggle last week after the Patriots. Alex and I were just shaking our heads and looking at each other and like, okay, let's be more positive. Let's just mention the positive things. And then after this Bengals debacle, we were basically, you know, going to throw that straight to the wind. But before we get to the Bengals, let's let everyone get to know you a little bit. So tell us about your experience while you're at UM.
Definitely. So I interned with the Miami Hurricanes. I interned with the basketball and the football team. I also interned with the Miami Dolphins and the Miami Heat. So I kind of hit every sport basically in Miami.
What was your major?
I was sports management and business administration.
Very good.
Yeah. So with the, you know, the Dolphins, obviously being a Dolphins podcast, kind of go into that a little bit more. I got to work on the field events, halftime events, post game events. I got to meet a lot of different players. I was there when...
What year?
This was 2011. Worked with the Dolphins. It was cool because, you know, one of the games that we actually, the once every team, undefeated team, lost, they bring in the 72 team. And so I was, you know, working that game. I got to be underneath, basically, it's like a little underneath bar that's
wow.
Underneath the stadium.
And cool.
I was with Dan Marino.
Share the private information. Ooh, we all don't know about this.
He downed a double Jack and Coke before he went on the field. Just crushed it. And so he was really cool. I got to say hi to him for a second. I got to meet Aronde Gadsden. His hands just destroyed my hand.
Yeah, I know someone else that knows him too. They said that it was his personal trainer at one point.
So. Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Hey, wow. Yeah. That's all. Yeah, he was a really nice guy. Really cool guy. So, I mean, I got to meet, you know, various Dolphins. It was a cool experience working with the Dolphins and, you know, working with the Heat and the Hurricanes. I mean, overall, just Miami sports in general is what I've kind of grown up loving. And, you know, that's kind of where what's got me back out here was, you know, not really any Miami teams, but kind of, you know, family and whatnot. So it's unfortunately not with them anymore, but, you know, glad to be able to talk about the Dolphins still and love my Dolphins. So I get to watch them every Sunday.
So I've known you since you were what, 5 years old?
Oof, man.
Something like that?
I don't even remember.
I can say that he grew up completely indoctrinated. He had no choice about what fandom he would become. Dad is a bit... overbearing, we might say.
I didn't have much of a choice to be not a Dolphins fan or any other team. I had to be a Dolphins fan. But the first game I remember with you, Scott, was the time we went to your house and watched the Dolphins play the Denver Broncos and Olindo Mare hit that game-winning field goal. That's my first Dolphins memory with you.
Here?
Yep, at your house. Long, long time ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah, your dad likes to host, so we end up there most of the time when we're watching a game together. So
yeah, I'm more of a go out and watch it at the bars, but it's kind of tough for the Dolphins.
Yeah.
We
blamed you in last week's podcast for making us go out to a bar.
That was my fault.
Yeah.
That was my fault.
And last year, weren't you the one that also made us go out to bar for that Baltimore debacle?
You know, I just have decided to stay away from bars
we
for
did
Dolphins
too.
Games.
Yeah. Especially doing this podcast, it's you know, the ultimate excuse we have is we can sit down, see everything on the TV, hear everything, take copious notes, not be interrupted by everything that goes on at a bar. So
yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Usually,
when I was a younger man, I preferred the bar because other reasons.
Yeah, you know, with me, it's I can get a couple drinks in and not really, you know, remember about what happened with the Dolphin game. Sometimes it's not exactly something you want to remember.
Yeah, which is, of course, what we would like to do about the Bengals. So I'm going to start this episode with, well, we've started it already, but near the beginning, tie this to the title of the episode, The Bell Tolls, right? So I've got something that we're going to introduce, and it's going to happen from this episode on to the end of the season. The bell tolls for Adam Gase and company. That's the number of games we have left with Adam Gase as our head coach and Ryan Tannehill as our quarterback, because we're done with him. We're going to fire his ass. We're going to get rid of Ryan Tannehill. There's no way we're paying his contract next year. This will be a whole new team with a whole new organization next year. I heard somebody talking this week, and they said that Stephen Ross is 79 years old. Did you know he was 79?
You know what? I did not know he was 79 years old.
Yeah. That tells me his patience has to be short, right? He has to realize he made a mistake hiring Tannenbaum. Because Tannenbaum, in the article I said about what a bad resume he had to begin with and never should have been hired, he's made the same mistakes here he made when he was, you know, in charge of the Jets with contracts and with players and all that sort of, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And the latest mistake was Adam Gase. Now, after Philbin, anything seemed better, right? Because that was a horrifyingly bad mistake.
I mean, horrific.
Yes.
It was hard to watch Gase.
Terrible hire. But with Gase, you know, came in, he was young. You believed that he was an offensive genius. People said that. He had a track record, some track record of success, you know, with Peyton Manning, I think. Now I'm seeing it was probably more Peyton Manning than it was Adam Gase, because Adam repeatedly demonstrates to us that he doesn't understand the value of a running game. He doesn't use the running backs he has correctly. He doesn't dedicate the time. If he's not dedicating the time during the game, I'm guessing that he's not dedicating the time during practice either to work that out. Might have to edit that one.
He did have some success with Jay Cutler in Chicago as well.
He got him to play better than he had played. Right?
I mean, there's only so much you could do with Jay Cutler.
Yeah, and he probably got more out of Ryan Tannehill than Ryan Tannehill is really capable of. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has never been a podcast about ripping Ryan Tannehill. When somebody puts on a Dolphins jersey, Alex and I love that person until they give us a reason not to love him. And we were pretty worried about Ryan in his rookie season because we could see with our own two eyes that he didn't have a touch pass. He couldn't throw the deep ball. He didn't have a pocket presence. He couldn't read defenses, at least quickly enough. And even his release was like too low of a trajectory. If you remember that rookie season, he had like a record number of balls batted down at the offensive line. There was a lot of problems there. Accuracy being a big one. He used to throw behind receivers pretty regularly, even on short crossing routes, to the point where you're worried that you're going to get a receiver killed in that circumstance. So
yeah, especially coming out of Texas A&M as a converted wide receiver, you know, he didn't have a long history of playing the quarterback position. So it was kind of evident, you know, in the beginning that there was going to be some sort of transition, you know, coming into the NFL and learning the position at a pro level.
If I had a buck for every time some announcer told me that Ryan Tannehill used to be a wide receiver, you know, we'd at least have a night out at a club. You know, if I did that sort of thing anymore. With bottle service and everything, right? Because I've heard that 1,000 times, and I'm sure most of the people that, you know, reach the point where they're listening to this probably already know that and have heard it ad infinitum as well.
Yep.
So I wanted to address that 30-some percent of people. I saw a percentage today on a poll. I don't know if I read deeply enough in it to understand how many people voted and what type of people were voting and all that sort of stuff. But 32, 34 people still think that this franchise is headed under the right direction under Gase. That's, with Ryan Tannehill quarterback. Do you think that?
Well, I think we're in a better position than we've been in the past 15 years at the quarterback position. We've been in a pretty bad position overall as a quarterback. Not saying we're in a great position, but we're in a better position. Now, before, when you were talking about, you know, getting Adam Gase out of Miami, getting Tannehill out of Miami, I agreed with half that statement. I still think Tannehill can somewhat work in an offense. Now, he's not going to win. He's not going to win you a Super Bowl. I think he's a guy who can lead you to the playoffs. I think if you put the right pieces around him, the type of defense that we have, if we can keep offenses off the field, I think you can have some magic happen in a perfect year. Do we need another quarterback? Absolutely. We should be drafting a quarterback every single year.
I am fighting an overwhelming urge to just lay into the problems with Tannehill deeper. But you know what? I'm just going to say I've reached the point where I've seen enough. It's been 7 years, right? This is his seventh year, you know, mid-seventh year. And when we're still going three and out, when we're still having a very low number of offensive plays per game, we're not moving the ball, the offense is not scoring, even against mediocre to less than average defenses, despite the injuries we have on the offensive line, it's not all Ryan Tannehill. It is a mixture of our offensive coordinator, aka head coach, and Ryan Tannehill. But Ryan has never been a franchise quarterback. I've never said he's a terrible quarterback. Alex has never said he's a terrible quarterback. We've both said he's just average, maybe even a little bit below average. Do you remember when we signed Mike Wallace?
I do, out of Pittsburgh.
That was the time that I knew that Ryan Tannehill was not going to be a franchise quarterback from us, because Mike Wallace had one really special skill set. We paid him a ridiculous amount of money. It was a terrible contract, but the one thing he could do better than maybe anyone else in the league at the time, maybe anyone else, was get open deep.
Yep.
He would beat double coverage deep. He would get wide open deep, and Tannehill could never hit him. Never.
Stretch the defense. He was perfect.
He overthrew. He underthrew. There were so many picks. Mike Wallace was not the type of receiver that was going to turn around, come back, and fight somebody for the ball. He gave up on it too much. And so people were really critical of Mike Wallace. But I kept saying, Mike Wallace is doing what we brought him here to do. It's Ryan Tannehill that's not capable of hitting him. And that long ball percentage for him is still very low. It's better than it was. So, yes, he has improved. So he hits one once in a while now, right? But he's still underthrowing them. He's still overthrowing them more often than he hits them. I don't know the percentage, but it's got to be like a 20% success rate on the long ball. And that's not good enough to be a franchise quarterback. Leaving points on the field every game.
I absolutely agree, especially with the type of, you know, burners that we have on our team. I mean, you got three guys under 4.440 speed. I mean, these are guys that can really stretch the field and make big plays happen, and we can't get the ball to them.
So I'm going to give you 34%, and it's probably millennials like you, maybe even a little younger than you. I have to guess because their view of the Dolphin world is very small. Mm-hmm. It doesn't encompass the entire history of the Dolphins. So to me, two things must be happening. One, you haven't gone back and watched historical games when we had a great coach and a great quarterback. And or two, you're myopic in the sense that you only watch Dolphin games. Because if you watch the rest of the NFL, if you sit down and watch from beginning to end a Rams game, you watch beginning to end a New England game where you're not hating on them so much because they're playing the Dolphins, right?
Yeah.
So you see Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in action. Even young kids, if you watch Carson Wentz,
Patrick Mahomes,
if you watch, you know, of course, Aaron Rodgers, especially when his knee's not, even with his knee out, he's still 10 times the quarterback that Ryan Tannehill is right now.
Yeah, so, look at the guys in his class, Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson.
They make decisions faster. They're more accurate. They have touch on the ball. They can know they have a sense in the pocket when to step to the left, when to step up, when to scramble out to the right. You know, they react to what's happening around them at the same time they're reading what's happening, and that's why they're much more successful. So, mm-hmm. I'm going to turn this into a life lesson for that 34%. Ready?
Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Okay. Don't settle in life. Don't settle. You don't have to accept the status quo, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a myopic fan of this team if you take the time to look around and see what it's like to have something better, because there's a lot of examples of something better. This goes like your job, right? You have a job and you go there every day and maybe you're bored, or maybe you've got a rotten boss, or it's a toxic environment. Everyone's backstabbing each other, or you just don't like what you do. Don't quit your job. Be a professional. But know that you have options in life. You can get a different job and keep getting a different job until you find one that you like, until you establish yourself at a good place in a career that you enjoy, and you'll be a happier person. The same thing applies to being a Dolphins fan. Don't sit back and say Ryan Tannehill is it because he's the best quarterback you've seen in a Dolphins uniform, because he's not. He's average or less than average compared to everyone else in the league. So is he better than the previous quarterbacks in the 15 years? Yes, we had shit for quarterbacks. I mean, I've Alex and I for years have been harping on it over and over, you know, crying over Drew Brees because we didn't draft him, and then because Saban just totally screwed up and listened to some jerky doctor that said, well, his shoulder's not in good shape, you know, and
maybe we have a Super Bowl now.
Yeah.
This guy just broke the yards.
Can you imagine 17 years? I mean, and if you have that guy, then you're working to put things in place around him. I don't know. We haven't had good management in a long time, so even if we got that one right, maybe we would have failed elsewhere. It's hard to say. Yeah. But I have pictures in my mind of Mike Wallace streaking down the field wide open like he was every single game, and Drew Brees connecting with him, because that's what he does perfectly. He's great at that, you know? I mean, you watch Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger. They're great at that too. They have that. He has the touch. He has the long ball. He can drop it in there with AB at full stride, and they score like crazy.
Could you imagine Drew Brees with the weapons that we have on offense?
Yes.
With this team? I mean, my gosh.
And so, yeah, I mean, we can cry over that, but it's really the philosophy, the Ron Wolf philosophy, the Bill Belichick philosophy. Keep drafting quarterbacks. Draft them every year until you have your franchise quarterback, and then still keep drafting them, because anything could happen to that guy at any moment. Bill Belichick has continued to draft quarterbacks. Some of them have worked out. Some of them haven't. Behind Tom Brady, he's got the GOAT. He's got the greatest quarterback of all time, and he's still spending draft picks on them. And have we drafted a quarterback in the last 3 years?
No.
The answer is no. That is correct. You know, the last one was Brandon Doty in the 7th round or something like that. I don't understand why this franchise doesn't know the obvious, that the quarterback is the most important position on the team. I'm going to have to repeat that every week until it gets through some people's heads. So that lesson, don't settle. If life hands you lemons, squeeze out the lemon juice until you can move on to a different point in life and you're eating cake.
Yep.
Right? So we got to get into the Bengals game a little bit.
Let's do it.
All right. So, I think the bottom line is what Alex and I were most worried about. And, you know, I've already harped on Gase to a point and Tannehill's, you know, weaknesses as a quarterback. The offensive line problems are obvious. But the number one thing is that the offense just flat sucks. And they have sucked the whole season. Okay. The reason that people thought Alex and I were negative is because we were bringing up issues that we saw that caused us concern: time of possession, number of offensive plays, success on the offense. And this beatdown we took from the Patriots highlighted the problem. And then this game just put the exclamation mark at the end of it. Mm-hmm. So we had one successful drive in the entire game. The offense scored 7 points. It was a nice drive. Things came together. We moved the ball, and the rest of the game, they were fucking atrocious. Okay, I don't swear a lot, but I'm getting pretty emotional here. So, so the F-bomb came out in this podcast. Part of that is the same thing that we've harped on with Adam Gase over and over. There's no commitment to the run game. He doesn't seem to understand it. He doesn't seem to understand how to get the ball to the playmakers he has on the team. Do you realize that Frank, I know you love Frank Gore.
My boy Frank Gore from the U.
Yeah. Is massively exceeding Kenyon Drake in number of opportunities.
He doubled his carries.
Yeah.
Last week. I mean, his average is ridiculous. I mean, his average has been ridiculous every single week, but we're not giving him touches.
Because I was already at that tipping point with Gase, especially with running backs, because he did the Arian Foster thing, and with the tight end, he did the Thomas thing, mm-hmm. and he kept bringing in old, broken people and standing them up on the starting position when clearly they couldn't handle it. And, you know, as an educated fan, I could see even in preseason, you know, even in clips of practice that they don't have it anymore and they're not going to be successful. If yep. I can see it, why can't somebody in the position paying millions of dollars, being the head coach of our team, can't see it?
It's called the Gruden mistake.
Explain that. Because I've picked on Chucky. Your dad likes him and I don't.
You know, he almost was the coach of the University of Miami at one point, wanted too much money. I like him. As I think he's a good coach. I'm not sure what he's doing, bringing in all these. I mean, they're the oldest team in the NFL are the Raiders. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're mm-hmm. doing. I have a good friend who's a big Raiders fan, and he has no. I mean, they've been bad for the past years. I mean, long time now, basically since that Super Bowl run. But I have no idea what Gruden's doing. I mean, Gase is kind of following suit. You know, I know a lot of. In our group chat with the Dolphins, a lot of people weren't really big on Frank Gore. I've always been big on Frank Gore, big locker room guy, great pass protector. So I was happy, even though he's an old running back, I was happy bringing him in. But I agree.
And Arian, you guys were right. Mm-hmm. I was critical of him because it looked like the same move repeated over and over again, bringing yep. in some old broken person. But he has age on him, but he's not broken.
No. He looks great. He looks fresh.
He's got the surge. He's got the power. He's got the absolute commitment when he runs the ball. You just know he's going to get you 3 yards minimum.
He's always falling forward every yes. time. He's back home.
And so why isn't he being used in third and one situations? Why is Tannehill getting, why is Gase getting cute and throwing the ball on third and one?
It makes no sense. We can extend the drives and our defense is getting tired. Our defense has been playing great at points this season. And
4 out of 5 times, I'm giving it to Frank Gore and saying, you get it done for us.
Yep.
And telling the offensive line, you push.
Yep.
You do your damn job.
Yep.
Create a hole or create a push. Get them those yards. And then the 5th time, I'm play actioning. I'm looking like I'm handing off to Frank Gore, and then I'm throwing to the tight end, you know, on a short flat or a receiver on a short crossing or something to get that first down.
Or every once in a while, give me a fullback dive. I mean, we used to do that with Polite.
But I'm not throwing bombs on 3-and-1 when we need to be, eating some clock and resting the defense and that low percentage pass play because Tannehill's a low percentage long ball thrower.
Yep.
It doesn't make any sense. The numbers don't line up. Nothing lines up about it. So I'm just looking at my notes from this game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of my first observations was right away, Tannehill is hanging on to the ball too long. So first I notice it without counting, and then I started counting, and I'm like, he's regressing because this is something he used to do,
mm-hmm.
right? And now I see him doing it again, and this is before, you know, Tunsil even went out.
Yeah.
So the second thing I noticed was on a very early drive, Gesicki was wide open. And there's nothing I'd like to see more than that rookie get the ball and prove that he was actually a good second-round pick because right now we both think he's a total bust.
Who is that guy?
Yeah. Tight Gesicki? End, second-round pick, oh, he's Mike Gesicki.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. All right.
You know who he is.
Yeah,
he's
I know.
Being sarcastic, people.
Penn State tight end. I loved him coming out of Penn State. I don't, you know, it's...
Yeah, you look at his highlight films, and he's spectacular.
He's a freak. The kid's an athletic freak.
And we aren't using him the way he's meant to be. Now, everyone says, you know, I heard in the preseason and practice that he's got issues with blocking. So, yes, work on his blocking. Keep working on his blocking. Know what his special skill set is. Use him for that and work on his weakness, which I have to believe they're doing. But they're not finding a way to get him the ball. And this one was purely Tannehill's fault because Gesicki was wide open and Tannehill massively overthrew him.
This is the new age NFL as well. I mean, put him out wide. So many tight ends are doing that now. Look at how successful tight ends have been. Jimmy Graham on the Saints, Travis Kelce, Gronkowski. I mean,
well, if you're scheming Alejandro, mm-hmm. one of the things I'm going to do is have him line up tight.
Yeah.
Right? And then put him in motion because you get a better to go out wide
sure.
because you get a better read on what defense is called, right? Yeah. Whether there's man going on, whether it's two man under, or whether it's a zone, you're going to see guys adjust to somebody moving.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I was never a big fan of the four wide out or the five wide out, nobody in the backfield mm-hmm. For this team. You know, if you go back to, you know, those, Greatest Show on Turf Rams, where Kurt Warner was just on fire and they had an amazing receiver set.
Bruce, Torrey Holt.
Yes, and they had an offensive line that could block anyone up and down the field and just protect his ass. And, you know, that was something special. We don't have anything marginally even close to that on this team. So I think it's ridiculous that we come out in formations like that.
Yeah.
We have to come out and we have to make the defense question themselves. Are they going to pass the ball? Are they going to run the ball? You can't allow them to commit like just on, based on the look, they're going to pass the ball. So the defensive line can pin their ears back and rush like mad. And, you know, the linebackers can take a step back or they can switch, you know, their call and you know what's going to happen because of the formation you're starting the play. And this team isn't good enough to do that.
Yeah.
This offense isn't good enough to do it.
We don't have a true number one wide receiver like those teams.
No, we all hoped Parker would be that, but, you know, everyone's seen all the Parker jokes at this point. He's just the, you know, not dedicated, always injured disappointment.
Yeah.
So
Chris Chambers talked about that before the season started.
First drive, ended in a putt. Second drive, it was a three and out, and on that third ball, Tannehill threw it right to the defender, and he dropped the ball.
Yep.
And it would have been a pick six if he'd held on to it because it was outside. And the defender just read what he was doing. He telegraphed it with his eyes. The guy jumped the route and just dropped the ball. So it looked like it was going to start bad, and we lucked out there.
Yep.
And then we got to see Kiko Alonso covering AJ Green. That was my next note. I'm like, you know, first I said, WTF is Kiko covering AJ Green? How, even in a zone defense, do you let that happen?
I wouldn't even have
he
Kiko
smoked
guard
us for a
Boyd.
Touchdown on that play, right? So yeah, there's you've, even if you're calling a zone, you've got to have a special rule set around special players. You can't allow that matchup to happen
on that team. You have to know where AJ Green is at all times. That's the only guy. Mixon's been kind of injured. You know, yeah. Boyd's coming on. But
Didn't we hear prior to the game that X was going to be in his pocket the whole game?
I thought he was going to man up the whole game.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened during the game.
In that play.
Changed our minds.
So, again, the penalty bug bit us. You know, it was a huge thing that kept Cincy drive alive when we ran into the kicker. Right?
Yep.
Let's go to something positive. I have a positive note here. I was really impressed with the pressure, especially Quinn was getting during the game. Where I am not a fan of our offense, you know, I'm exactly the opposite, basically. I'm a growing fan of this defense. And so you can say the defense gives up, you know, X amount of points and they have a pretty low ranking because of the amount of yards they give up or the amount of it's all about number. It's about the offense.
Yeah.
It's because the offense is so bad that our defense is on the field all the time. All
putting
these,
us in bad spots.
Yes. Not just bad spots, bad, you know, the three and outs, they get exhausted by the end of the game because they're on the field all the time.
When we traded for Robert Quinn, I was so excited. I remember writing to you guys about that. And I believe is a fourth round pick, if I remember.
That's correct.
Fourth round pick we traded for Robert Quinn, which I thought was one of the best trades we've made in a while. I mean, the guy is already dominating all season. I love watching this defense with Burke. I Xavier Howard, Minka, that draft pick. I mean, I loved him at Alabama.
Best draft pick we've made in years.
The kid's a special player.
Best draft pick we've made since the last time we drafted a safety.
Yes.
Jones.
Yep. Yeah. And he's, I think.
Minka's maybe we're only good at drafting safeties. That's it.
Basically, at this point.
So another positive note I had in here. In the second quarter, we finally had a sustained drive after, multiple short and outs or three and outs. And I thought Gase made, one of a really good call when he had, Drake on that deep crossing route.
Yeah. Right? The one that went for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great.
And Tannehill, compliment to him, dropped it in there where it needed to be.
Great touch pass. How many times have we
been saying? It was not a perfect touch pass. I went back and watched it. Mm-hmm. And Drake had to
adjust,
just slow down just a touch. So it's not worth being critical over. Live, it looked amazing.
It looked great.
Yep. Yep.
How many times, Scott, have we been talking about that? Why? I mean, this kid from Alabama, Kenyon Drake, the kid's a star. Get the ball in his hands.
He's a big, explosive play guy. I'm certainly hoping that your boy Gore would take him under his wing and give him some of that, commit to a hole, go fast, be patient and explode, get the 3 and 4 yards instead of always dancing or trying to pop it outside and stuff. But Drake isn't getting anywhere near enough touches to get a rhythm going, which you need to do as a running back.
Absolutely.
And,
I agree.
And for every 0 play, or every 1 yard play, you're increasing the chances that he's going to end up popping one by giving him the ball. And then that's a big play that you need, mm-hmm. right? So yep. I think the combination of Drake and Gore would be awesome if we ever committed to it, but we never have, not once this season.
Yep.
And I'm worried now that we're even less likely to do so because that's Adam Gase's nature, first of all. I already recognize that, but now he has the excuse, the injuries to the offensive line.
Yep.
There's a certain amount of validity to the excuse, but it all boils back down to a combination of scheme and adjustments, and the backups on the roster are equally his fault, Tannenbaum's fault, the GM's fault. He has strong influence on personnel decisions. I know that.
Yeah.
So if your backups aren't good enough to be the next man up, then that's on you. He's had 3 years to shape this.
Yep.
Again, Wyatt, at this point, we have a winning record. And yeah, funny circle that I participate in, and I may have mentioned it in the past, but I'm just going to mention again. We have a circle of old Dolphins. It's not just Alex and I. It's, three or four more other people all around the same age as us, over 50, who've seen all the same things we have over the years and have all become very dispirited and beaten down by this Dolphins team that we all love that's been bad for so long. It's essentially been mediocre or less for 20 years, right?
Pretty depressing to read some of those group texts sometimes.
We get on a roll of ragging on them, and it really fits the old Dolphins theme, which is why we named it to that to begin with, where those critics, those Muppet critics. Have you ever seen the Muppets? Do you know those
guys? I do know the guys? Muppets. I know those guys.
That picture that's right there on the wall behind me?
Yep. Yeah.
I always found them to be hilarious. Actually, when I was young, I was sort of annoyed by them.
Really?
So, young.
Yeah.
But the older I got and the more mature I got, the funnier I found them to be.
Appreciation for
yes.
Them.
Yeah. So, that's us. It's all with a sarcastic sense of humor.
Can I talk about my boy Jakeem Grant?
Please do.
Positive about the game and just overall. I mean, first of all, this kid came out of Texas Tech. He played with Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
They were killer in college.
I saw a great picture last week.
Oh, yeah?
From the Texas Tech with the two of them together.
They were unreal in college. I mean, the kid, one thing that we've always been frustrated about is our special teams. We just never seem to get the...
Not always.
Not, well...
I love Darren Rizzi. If Gase and every other coordinator got fired at the end of the season, I would hope that the next person coming in would consider keeping Darren Rizzi. I like him.
When I look at the, when I say always for me, I'm saying the last years that I've been able to speak to you guys realistically about football,
we had this great coach. His name was Mike Westhoff. Mm-hmm. He was a fantastic special teams coach through the Shula era, even beyond. Somebody, I don't remember what it was, Juan. I think he got in a fight with Wanstat at one point. Wanstat fired him, and he went to the Jets and became a great special team coach for the Jets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've had great special teams in the past, and we've had great special teams coaches in the past, but you grew up in the era.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, you know, as I mean, I've gone back and watched old Dolphin tapes and whatnot, but I'm talking about the last 10, 15 years. I mean, we never – you could, how many, I mean, on your, probably in your hand, you could probably count them how many times we had a explosive returner like Jakeem Grant. Mm-hmm. I mean, this kid has, you know, but from last year to this year, this kid has been explosive. And I don't know, we're finally
special teams has won us games this year.
Punt returns, kick returns.
Special teams could have won us this game, if just Ryan Tannehill alone hadn't blown it.
Two defensive touchdowns.
That's right. Take those two away. Just, they didn't happen. He threw the ball away or something. Yeah. We ended up punting and, you know, and the defense scored, or, you know, we had anything positive happen. Yeah. There.
Yeah.
Even if we didn't score, right, we would win the game.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill gave this one away. So,
yeah.
But back to special teams, right? Taylor, who's this defensive tackle surprise, the two good picks from that draft, mm-hmm. later rounds, we didn't get any of them right in the early rounds, but yeah. Godshaw and Taylor have been playing balls out, playing hard, and Taylor blocked that field goal.
Yeah.
That was huge.
That was a huge play.
Again, special teams
yeah.
kept us in the game.
It's been significantly
better. It was 17-0, and it was more special teams. As special teams scored 10, offense scored 7, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Or 6, depending on how you look at that.
Yeah. But.
So the refs didn't do us any favor, too. There was one thing that really momentum shifted the game, and it was that drive before the half, the 3rd-and-2 terrible call, right? I got into it a little bit already. We came out with 3rd-and-2 and spread the field.
Yeah.
There was no back in the backfield, so the defense did not have to respect the run in any way, shape, or form, except for maybe keep one eyeball on Tannehill.
Sure.
So that he's not the one running. And it showed the D what our intent was. And so they could rush the pass rusher, contain him, and defend the pass. It just took half of the possibilities away. It was a terrible call on Tannehill's fault. I stood up and I was yelling at the screen, God damn it. Why are you doing this? Why don't you hide what you're going to do? Why don't you, you know, there's a, just come out in the pro formation, you know, whether it's 2 wide or 3 wide or, you know, tight end combination, keep a back in the backfield, make them respect that run on 3rd-and-2.
Yep.
That was a momentum shifter right there. Back on the positive side.
Back on the positives.
Okay. Again, we've already said it. I love Fitz. I can't wait to see him have a great career in Miami. Great draft pick. In this game, he single-handedly stopped a Bengals drive. He made a read on, maybe it's because he sees it in practice so much, the damn wide receiver / bubble screen.
Yeah.
He saw it happening on the Bengals side and just dropped his coverage because he was in coverage out on the field, dropped his coverage and ran straight to the, I thought he was going to pick it at first.
Just blew up the play.
And just utterly just laid into it, blew up the play. And God, I love Minka because he has that, I think he has that Zach Thomas thing where he studies and he understands what's going to happen and makes instantaneous decisions, pre-reads, right? Like before the play even starts, he has an idea of what's going to happen and then reads it and makes a commitment and is going to not only be great himself, but help the people around him get better too. So that excites me. The potential for this defense excites me a lot. X is great. Jones is just a classic
stud.
Great guy. McDonald certainly holds his own, yeah. Right? And Fitz is up and coming. And then the surprise on the D line with the two tackles, you know, playing like that. It makes me think that we at least have a future for this defense.
Not to mention our young linebackers. I mean, they're getting better. You know, Baker.
Yes, and so Baker showed up in this game. Yeah. You could see his improvement. He not only had his first sack, but he also had a second sack. Got really excited by that.
He did.
I'm like, it's so great to see a rookie in there making great plays, stepping up.
Baker was also only
behind. He seems to be ahead of Raekwon to me. Raekwon still, if you sit back and rewatch some of the game and just watch Raekwon, he's still very slow to make decisions to even commit. And so he's a rookie. He gets a pass to an extent.
Yeah, they're both rookies, essentially.
But yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still consider him a rookie because he never played last year.
Not one regular season game. But Raekwon, right. I mean, Raekwon, just to give a little props to Raekwon, he did have a tackle for loss. He had six tackles, which was third amongst Dolphins. He was only behind Baker and Jones, so Baker was second.
That's stepping up. That's showing improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, yeah, back to Grant. You were talking about Grant.
Jakeem.
Yeah, so there's one little thing that I'm certain happened. I'm certain that Adam Gase listened to part of our podcast last week.
Absolutely.
Okay. And the reason I'm certain that he listened to it is because at some point, I'll just say it was early on the podcast because I don't freaking remember.
It was some point.
Yeah. But we said, you got to stop using Amendola to return punts. Clearly, Grant is a playmaker. Here's one more opportunity to get the ball in his hands. Every time you get the ball in his hands, you have a chance to score. You don't really, you know, Amendola's going to catch the ball, but you're not going to score.
Yeah.
Right? And what happened?
Yep. He scored.
Gase put Grant as the punt returner, and he scored.
Yep.
And it's the reason we, you know, we got up to 17-0, and it was just such fun to watch plays like that happen. They're magical. They're exciting. It gets me up and jumping up and down and yelling, you know, echoing my voice through the neighborhood. So
I absolutely think that Gase listened to you guys' podcast because they also threw to Kenyon Drake, which you guys talked about a lot too.
Yep,
that one.
Yep. But he probably thought to himself, you know, the ego took over and said, well, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about when it comes to committing to the running game, because he certainly still has not committed to the running game. And he certainly still has not committed to giving Drake the ball to run the ball where Gore is the short yardage and the guy to spell Drake, right?
Yep.
That's what we both feel he should be. I mean, for all the reasons, because he's, you know, so committed and he'll be fresh to not be in there that much. You know, I'm fine with, I think actually it's pretty cool that Gase starts him so he can maintain that, you know, legendary started so many games record in the NFL.
Yeah.
I think that's great. That's classic. But, dude, take him out after the first play.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, get Kenyon in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I love my boy Frank. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, Kenyon is younger. He's explosive. But, I mean, talk about explosive plays. Frank Gore, it seems like he always busts like somewhere from like a 10 to 15-yard run every game.
Every game he's good for one.
He always gets one.
And he gets a couple of 8-9 yarders in there, too. So, yeah, I mean, it's no criticism of him. You have to love him for his heart and his dedication, his work ethic, and God, you hope that he can also teach the kids around him some of the things that made him great.
How to be a professional in the league, how to stay healthy. I mean, the guy is a workhorse. He rarely missed games. I mean, this guy never missed games almost. I mean, this guy was a guy who tore his ACL, both ACLs, left and right knee, in college, and this guy has stayed healthy throughout his NFL career.
And people said that he'd never have an NFL career because of that.
Yep.
And boy, did he prove them wrong in San Francisco.
Absolutely.
So those of you who would defend, I hear too many people step up and say, oh, but Tannehill, I've heard this argument too many times too, and it's getting on my nerves. Tannehill and Gase in the last 11 games or whatever it was. Or
10-1.
10-1, 11-2, 13-3, whatever.
11-3 now.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I'm not doing my math very well at this time of night after a single beer. God, I'm old. Last podcast, I never really got deeply into why I brought this up. I took statistics classes a long time ago when I was in college, right?
Let's not say how many years.
And I don't remember the professor's name. You know, I don't remember a ton of the formulas because, you know, if I didn't end up using them as part of my craft, my profession, then they went away, right? Even early on. But one of the things that always stuck out, so this is a repeat, but I'm going to say it again, is that he said, you can make statistics say anything you want to, especially if you narrow the window. He's like, you know, you have this much data, but if you just take a lens and you focus it on a small area, you can find something that mathematically proves what you want to say, even if the big in the big picture it's not true. And that's what that statistic is. So if you look at Tannehill's career, mm-hmm. right, he has a losing record.
Yep.
Okay. He's less than 50% as a starting quarterback in the NFL, and that is not good enough, right? So I'm sorry I'm back on Tannehill again. I just wanted to get this statistic. And here's an important one. For Gase as a head coach, guess what his road record is in the last eight games?
1-7?
Yes. So did you hear that?
No, I guessed.
Yeah.
I just figured we were 0-8, but I was like, no, you know what? I'm going to go 1-7. Yeah. Get us one win.
1-7. And so, you know, to me, it's a bullshit statistic because I'm turning the lens back on the people that are using like that, oh, the last 11 games with Gase and Tannehill, right? So here's one back for you, 1-7 in the last eight road games. What do you think of that?
It's horrific. It's, you know, those people are saying that those are the baseball stats. That's the, you know, you're hitting over 300 on a day that it rains before a Tuesday.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. So it gets to the point where it's like a joke or where it's meaningless, but people take that really seriously and they get heated in an argument against you, whether it's, you know, in writing on a message board or whether it's like you're talking about it. I shake my head and I'm like, you know, you're doing that statistics thing that my teacher, you know, way back when I was in college taught us all on day one.
Yeah.
You know? All right. Let's get past the Bengals game. We all know what happened. You know, 14-point turnaround where the offense gave up. The defense played well.
Yeah.
I said I was going to get past it, and I still can't get past it. I'm pissed.
We got to look forward. We got to get positive.
That circle, that text circle, you know, one of the guys said, you know, when we were even 3-1, he said, this is the worst I've ever felt about a 3-1 team. And he hit the nail on the head. And that, you know, yes, they listened to our podcast, but mm-hmm. These guys have their own thoughts. They're really successful, well-educated, smart businessmen who also know football too. And, that's why I enjoy, you know, but the tech circle gets pretty dark because we've had it and we've been, you know, we know what it's like to be great and to always believe that you have a chance in a game. And now we know what it's like to know you have no chance, you know. Ryan Tannehill gets the ball, and you've got to score a touchdown. And you've got a minute and a half left. How confident are you that that's going to happen? I honestly can't remember it ever happening. It may have happened, but my brain has gone
Rams.
To the negative side so much. Well, Alex and I were there, but that wasn't the last drive of the game that happened. Ooh. And it was the fourth quarter.
Almost the last drive. That was that pass to Devontae Parker for the touchdown.
Yeah.
And right there was not a lot of time left. Very good. That was probably the last one.
And I should actually be the one to remember that.
You guys were there.
We were there.
Yep.
It's it's like the picture that's on our website and our podcast picture is from that game.
Yep.
So, damn it.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. We're going to need you around more often to help us with memory problems. Cool.
Let's get positive. Let's move forward to this Bears game, huh?
Let's touch on injuries and then we'll go to the Bears.
Sure. In regards to the Dolphins, we're looking at Tunsil, who has that concussion from last week. You know, no word on him yet, but I mean, usually it's a little bit more than a week for a concussion, depending on how mild or severe it is. So maybe we might not see Tunsil in the lineup this week. We got Wake. He's, you know, getting a little injured. He's getting a little older, so hopefully he can get healthy. We don't know any word on him, really. Andre Branch, McCain. We got Grant with his looks like a shoulder, and it seems like it bothered him last week as well. He didn't play. He played some offensive snaps, but not as many as we probably wanted, especially with Parker out. And then we got, you know, Derby, the tight end.
I hope he can at least return kicks and punts for us.
That's what they think he's going to play, but only punts and kicks. Mm-hmm. They don't think he's going to, especially that Parker looks like to be coming back. Mr. Glass looks like to be, you know, coming back this week.
The one guy on our team that can beat press coverage. Or so people say.
Yeah, and we haven't really seen much of that yet, but you know, maybe we'll see that this week.
Bears. You have a good Bears story.
I have a good Bears story. So,
yeah, so I'm going to let you handle it.
Ted Larson. He got drafted by the Patriots in 2010, came to the league, was overall pretty good lineman, got picked up on a one-year deal in 2016 with the Bears. first practice with the Bears. Larson, there's a it's a disguised blitz in the practice, and Akeem Hicks comes in and bull rushes him, and he pancakes him. And Akeem Hicks, if anyone knows,
pancakes him or Larson pancakes
Hicks? Larson pancakes Hicks and just destroys him. Which, if you guys know who Akeem Hicks is, he's a nasty defensive lineman, not a guy you typically want to mess with. One of the better defensive players until Khalil Mack came on the team recently. But that caused a fight. From then on, they matched up against each other in 9 practices. Out of 9 practices, there were 4 fist fights. Every time they went against each other, they got into a heated argument where teammates had to pull them apart.
So they hate each other's ass.
They hate each other. And now they're finally having a rematch against each other.
Oh, boy.
But this time, not as teammates. I think it's going to be awesome. Something to look for. I think you'll see a personal foul. I think you'll see something happen this Sunday.
I'm tired of the personal foul flags against us that cost us drives.
Let's hope that it's we're not the one retaliating. It's usually the person who gets the flag.
Let Ted get the first punch in.
And, exactly.
Let the Bears get the penalty for it. Yeah.
So I thought it was a pretty cool story when I was reading up on the Bears. I didn't realize. I knew Larson was a Bear, but I didn't realize there was some history with some of the D linemen. So you figure the D linemen, offensive linemen getting fight in practices, but 4 out of 9 practices getting fight in every single practice, they're getting in some sort of issue. That's awesome. I can't wait to watch that matchup.
All right, so you think that the Dolphins have a chance to beat the Bears?
Oh, we're beating the Bears.
Tell me how.
Oh, okay. Well, Mitch Trubisky, first of all, his stats are almost identical. Almost identical to Tannehill at this point. You're looking at him with, he right now has 7 touchdowns, I believe, this year. I'll verify that right now. But he has, I believe, 7 touchdowns this year. He has, 8 touchdowns. 8 touchdowns this year, 3 interceptions. Tannehill with 8 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He has completed only 6 more passes than Tannehill. So where I'm getting at, he played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 2 weeks ago. Okay, we know Tampa Bay doesn't have
that's where he rang up his stats.
He threw 6 touchdowns
that
game.
Yeah, it was insane.
6.
Yep.
This is a second-year quarterback who has very little weapons on offense. Mm-hmm. His best receiver is Allen Robinson, who at this point has 19 receptions for 217 yards and 1 touchdown. Yeah. That's not a number one receiver.
Nope.
Their best offensive weapon at this point is either Jordan Howard or Trey Burton.
Yeah, well, I'm worried about Trey Burton.
We always historically have been, okay, not historically, but in the past 10 years, we cannot cover tight ends, especially Gronkowski in our division. Linebackers get eaten up every time. So that's
and
the
if
one.
If McDonald
matchup.
Is out and Fitz is moving over to free safety, then he's not going to be the one covering the tight end in most circumstances.
Minka will take McDonald's spot and won't be able to cover him like we had him working on tight ends so far this season. So makes you wonder. That's basically probably the.
Please don't put Kiko on them.
You know what's going to happen. I love Kiko, especially, you know, him being Cuban.
This year he's a savage.
He has Pro Bowl numbers
at this
point.
He still can't
cover. He's the second. I think it was last week. He's second most tackles in the league. Mm. I mean, the guy's having a year. Fumbles, interceptions. I mean, but back to the Bears, I really think that if we put some pressure, I mean, if Cam Wake can play, Robert Quinn, Godshaw, I mean, you have all these guys who can put some pressure on the quarterback. We stopped the run game. I mean, Jordan Howard, we've seen Tariq Cohen. That guy's a stud when he gets the ball in space, but they have the same issue we do. They have 2 running backs. They don't really know how to use them, it seems like. Mm-hmm. If we can somewhat stop the run and force them to pass, I think we can definitely do that. We've held our own with running backs so far this year enough. The Patriots game was anomaly. So that's out the window. I'm not talking about that game, but all the other games, we've held our own so far in the running game. You know, I just think that with the weapons that we have playing in Miami, also, we're not obviously a great road team. We haven't won on the road. It's one of those things that I think that with playing in Miami, with the humidity, there's not a big travel being from the Midwest. It's not a huge travel issue like it is with the Raiders coming over to see us in the East Coast. I really think we can beat the Bears with Tannehill. He doesn't have to be extremely impressive. He doesn't have to play Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't have to play like that. He just has to limit the mistakes. We have 10 interceptions as a defense. That's the most in the NFL right now. 10.
I said I like our defense. The future looks bright.
We look good.
The defense.
I really think you put pressure on Mitch Trubisky that you are going to get some mistakes. You're going to force him to make some passes he probably wouldn't have wanted to make. He had too much time against Tampa Bay. He was getting no pressure. He had 5 touchdowns in the first half. That's not going to happen against Miami. It just isn't.
I'm certainly predicting a loss here.
Okay. I think we win 24-17. That's my prediction.
Yeah, you and your dad like to actually pick numbers. I hate picking numbers.
I do every week for all my teams.
Okay. Very good. All right. Now I'm going to tell you why we're going to lose.
Okay.
Okay. But I will say in our pick episode, prior to preseason, I did pick us to beat the Bears.
But Khalil Mack wasn't on that team yet.
Khalil Mack wasn't on the team,
The defense has changed.
Yeah. He's a generational player. So I don't know how we are possibly going to block that man. And if we put a lot of extra work into blocking him, then someone else is going to come free. And Tannehill doesn't get rid of the ball fast enough, and he'll just do first looks and dump offs, and all they have to do is play tight defensive coverage, and our offense will draw a big fat donut. I think we lay an egg because our offense will not score against this defense. So I have difficulty closing my eyes and imagining. Now, if something magical happens, Grant gets another kickoff or punt return, our defense not only gets the turnover, but also either gives us amazing field position, we get the ball on the 15 or 20 yard line. Sure. So where we can take a couple of shots, and if we don't succeed, then kick a field goal instead of penalties or sacks going backwards, then it's a possibility. If our defense scores, we get that pick six or that strip sack fumble recovery return for a touchdown.
Yeah. Get that turnover
totally
chain.
Exciting.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we need.
Yeah. So do we have a chance? If we have a chance, it's because of our defense, not because of our offense. Our offense is right now it's not the worst, but it is among the worst I've seen. It's as bad. The Cleo Lemon year was the worst. The 1-15 Tony Sprint.
Greg Camarillo, baby.
He saved us from, that one reception saved us from being Owen, whatever.
Yep.
That was the worst offense we ever had.
Yeah.
But this one is horrific. And it's horrific because of a very toxic combination of average quarterback and bad coaching. So they gave the game to the Bengals, and they could give the game to the Bears the exact same way.
You know that the Bears, they caused the opposing team to turn the ball over 1 out of 4 possessions. That's
what Khalil Mack is that disruptive. 25%. I mean, his first game, he had got in there and
two
strip sacks and
strip sack.
Yeah. Insane.
From Hundley.
The guy's an animal.
Oh, no, Kaiser.
Yeah.
Kaiser's on the team now.
And so is our right tackle going to be able to block him? No chance. There's no chance that, he's going to need help.
Got to put that rookie tight end from Notre Dame, put him out there.
Smith,
yeah. Put him out there and try to help.
Yeah, is he the blocker? Yeah, I don't know.
Out of the two that we drafted, he's the blocker. Definitely. Yeah. That's what he did at Notre Dame, a big blocker. But did you watch the Arizona Bears game? That's what gave me hope.
I did not.
That was with Sam Bradford. They lost by 2 in Arizona. Uh-huh. Chicago has played significantly better at home. That's going into this podcast, the analysis that I was trying to... The direction I was going in was basically kind of mirroring the way that the Cardinals, which that offense, let's talk about a bad offense. Yeah. Our offense is not as bad as the Cardinals. They are bad, really bad.
They have a generationally good running back and they can't.
He's had an awful year so far because of it.
Yeah.
And that was with Bradford. They didn't even bring Rosen in fresh blood, maybe excited in the offense, a spark. That was with Bradford. Bradford had 2 interceptions. They lost 16-14, the Cardinals.
Yeah.
So I really think...
Oh, this could very well be a very low-scoring game. This could be a baseball score. This could be a 6-3.
12-9.
Yeah.
Field goals.
A snore fest, or my notebook page is mostly empty except for negative stuff about our offense. And make a Fitzpatrick positive notes.
Yeah. I think we're going to.
And I love Jones, too. I just have, for years, I've loved him. He's just such a leader. What a difference when he's on the field and when he's not.
Tipped that ball in the Cincinnati game that got that interception. I think he's going to do some other things like that in the Bears game. I just think we're going to have a different offense. I think after 2 weeks, looking like, you know, we're sleepwalking through our offensive plays and the offense. I mean, it looks like we don't even watch film on offense sometimes. I don't know what Gase is thinking, but
yeah,
I really think it's going to be a difference. I think the Dolphins
when I was really studying football, I learned about the whole concept of scripting your first couple of possessions on offense, and it just does not look like this offense does that at all. It looks like Gase just pulls it out of his ass. Yep. From one play to the next.
You know, when it comes to the Bears, one thing I looked at, and I know teams are different. I understand that every year it's a different team, different set of guys and whatnot. But historically, Miami Dolphins have owned the Chicago Bears.
What's our record?
8-4 against the Chicago Bears all time.
I wouldn't say that's quite owning, but it's certainly
We've
winning.
Doubled our wins. I say that's owning.
Okay.
Not only that, lately we're 3-4 out of the last four games were 3 out of 4 we've won.
Bears have been pretty bad for a while.
So have we, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even
when
they're bad
we've been mediocre
years,
for a while. Seems like they've been actually bad for a while.
They did make it to the Super Bowl in 06, though.
Easily forgotten.
Just saying. I mean, I know that was Rex Grossman and whatnot. And, you know, but they were pretty good. They were better than we were at that time. So, I mean, we have won some games. I mean, not that historical, you know, records and whatnot make a difference. But I just think that I think history is on our side. I think the Bears are one of those teams. I mean, I think they don't want to see Miami sometimes. 85.
Yeah. Well, that is my favorite game of all time. I love the Super Bowl, you know, wins that we had from our distant past, and even the Super Bowl appearances, even though they're, you know, getting there has been magical. Mm-hmm. That 85 game, there was just electric in the air. Do yourself a favor, millennials out there. Find a copy of that game and watch it. Great coaching, great quarterback, just stellar kick ass, overcome a team that's really better than you are and just beat them down with, God, I love that game.
For the Dolphin fans who haven't seen that game, who are around my age, please watch the game. We were a bunch of savages back then. I mean, this is a completely different Dolphins than we know. This is my dad's Dolphins. I mean, this is Scott's Dolphins. This is, you know, looking back at that game, I mean, before the game, around the city, they were hanging teddy bears around the city. I mean, these were a bunch of angry men who wanted to get this victory. They did not allow that 72 Dolphin team, after only 13 years, to allow another undefeated team to play in the NFL like that. And in week 13.
I hope you're right. I hope I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. I want the Dolphins to come out and win. I always want them to win. Your father might be at the point where he thinks a draft pick is more important than a win. And so
five games in.
It's a tough thing with a winning record. Let's hope we have a good game. Let's hope Gase figures something out, turns it around. You know, I'm going to ring that bell every week because I think he's gone and I'm counting down. But, you know, if he comes out and wins most of the remaining games, then and figure something out on offense, then maybe I'll change my mind. But at this point, I have enough of a measure of Tannehill. I have enough of a measure of Gase to think that they're not the right people. So thanks for coming over, man.
Of course, Scott. It was awesome, man.
We'll have to do it again. Maybe we'll get you and Alex onto a podcast in the future.
Yeah.
That could be fun, too. See father and son go at it with each other.
Yeah, we don't usually agree on too many things with when it comes to our teams. Some things, but usually we're on the other side. I try to be positive sometimes, and then he'll be too positive and I'm negative. It gets crazy.
Well, I've been in that room with both of you many, many, many times for many, many years, and so it's a lot of fun.
Yep. Thanks for having me on, Scott. It was awesome.
All right, good night.
Night.
Thanks again to the band Tartanic for the use of their music. If you get a chance, catch them at your nearest Renaissance Festival and tell them Scott and Alex from Two Old Dolphins said hello.
Thank you for listening to Two Old Dolphins. Join us next week for more news, analysis,